powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacy. Joining us right now is ESPN's Bill Barnwell. Bill, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Now, we have questions that we're going to ask about the upcoming Super Bowl, around the rest of the NFL, all kinds of good stuff. But obviously, being that we have been talking about the Seahawks' new OC, Shane Waldron, I have to ask about your immediate reaction.
Well, I think I had the same reaction a lot of Seahawks fans had, which was, well, thank God it wasn't Adam Gase or some of the, you know, nightmare candidates who came up in the discussion, not to criticize them too much. Might be good offensive coordinators, but obviously having someone with less of a toxic reputation might be positive. I think there's some things to be interested about here. I mean, obviously the offense the Rams run in Los Angeles is very different from what Seattle runs. I mean, so much of it's under center, so much of it is working off of play action significantly, which the Seahawks do a fair amount of, but different sorts of play action, I think. A lot of focus on making plays look similar, a lot of, focus on sort of working in structure to make, things work in structure. And I think it's always going to be a balance with Russell Wilson because he's such a unique quarterback and such a unique player that I think you want to give him options in structure, but you also want to take advantage of the incredible skill he has as an improviser and out of structure. So, that might take some time. I do think it's going to be a balance for whoever the coach is, but now that they picked Waldron, I think that, there's some things to like and some things to have some concerns about as the offense gets started next year.
Bill, what do you take of it from Pete Carroll's perspective? I think a lot of people looked at this hire, and Pete Carroll has typically hired his offensive coordinator. He's done this twice now, let go Jeremy Bates, then Daryl Bevel to hire Brian Schottenheimer. Now, obviously, he has Shane Waldron. All of those hires were made in a matter of days. This took about two weeks. And is also hiring somebody that's a little bit outside the norm for him. What was your expectations for Pete Carroll to find somebody that he was going to hire? Did you expect him to hire somebody like Shane Waldron or somebody more along the lines of Anthony Lynn?
I expected more of the latter. You know, I expected someone with a little more experience as a coordinator. I sort of figured maybe they would go for someone who did have that experience elsewhere. Whereas Walter has not been the OC there really. It's been Sean McVay as the play caller, obviously, and the prime offensive mind for the Rams. I do think that there's kind of a process happening here, which started last year, of course, with them opening up the offense and throwing more. I don't think that's Pete Carroll's primary idea of what an offense is, but I think he wanted to defer to Russell Wilson, wanted to see what that offense could look like. And of course we saw plenty of positives, and as the year went on, some negatives. But I do think that, he sort of opened up his mind a little bit. And even though there's been talk about the offense going back to what it was and being more run heavy, especially on earlier downs, I do think that he just changed a little bit. And I do think that overall, even if it's not as pass happy as it was in the first month or month and a half of the year, like it was last year, I do think that the offense is going to be, maybe more open and have more sort of different sort of ideas than maybe we would have seen from the Seahawks a couple of years ago if they had been hiring someone at that time to replace Brian Schottenheimer.
Bill, curious to know what you think about this. Do you think that that pass-heavy offense Seattle had and the success they had with it earlier this season was just because they kind of sprang it on teams that weren't expecting that from them? Or do you think that there was something there that they can try to replicate in 2021?
I think it's a combination of both. I think obviously teams were expecting them to run the ball, and I think that as the year went on, they found more solutions, to stopping that. And they found out the Seahawks didn't really have a plan B when it came to the offense. They were really throwing the ball downfield a ton, didn't really have a very effective quick game, didn't have an effective short passing attack to sort of scare teams. They had, a decent running game, but not a super efficient running game. So there just wasn't that sort of, obvious answer to what was happening. And I think that the hope with Shane Waldron is that they're going to have more answers, and you figure that that the passing attack is still going to be a core of what they do because they have the personnel to do it. They have Russ, who's incredible at making those throws, with DK, with Tyler Lockett. I mean, receivers who we know they can make plays downfield, and they're still going to be threats next year. But I think having a coordinator who can sort of fill in those gaps and help Russ fill in those gaps of, okay, what do we do when they're playing too deep and we don't have those sort of lanes, those passes that we had earlier in the season when teams were playing more single high. I think that's been something Pete's talked about, and I think that it's something that they can actually work on and improve on and still integrate a lot of the stuff we saw last year. So I think it's going to still be effective, but I do think that you want to be selective in when you use it, and you want to make it, you know, not the focus of your offense, but have it be a significant portion of your offense.
Bill, this Super Bowl matchup is an intriguing one. From you look at Tom Brady and the Buccaneers and Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes and what they've been able to do. What's the main common denominator between these two teams? Usually you look at Super Bowl matchups and you look at the way teams are able to get there, and those are the new blueprints that teams try to replicate the following year or years to come. Do you see something like that in this Super Bowl matchup for the NFL?
A little bit. I see, honestly, more on the defensive side than the offensive side. I look at these defenses. I see two teams who have great front fours. You know, the Chiefs, obviously, with Frank Clark and Chris Jones being the primary guys there. And then with the Bucs, a little bit deeper with Vita Vea and Dominican Sue in the middle, and then Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul up front. And then you see defenses that I think, you know, are great at getting pressure with four and great at forcing takeaways. And I think that as the NFL goes on and as offenses get more and more pass happy, and as it's easier and easier to score and harder to play coverage, I think you're going to see teams say, hey, you know, we can't count on stopping, you know, holding teams three and outs. We're just going to try and get it to takeaway. We're going to try and to, you know, create a sack, get a team in third and long, second and long, or create a takeaway. And if we're going to give up points in that process, well, we'll deal with that, but we're going to try and score otherwise. So I think that these two teams spent a ton up front on their defensive lines. They've drafted people in the secondary, but haven't spent all that much outside of Tyrann Mathieu being the one expensive defensive back in this package for Chiefs or the Bucs. So I think that it sort of, you know, it sort of tells us more about where the league is going on defense than maybe more about where it's going on offense.
This is Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Bill Barnwell right now. Bill, when you're looking at the NFC West a little bit, this is a conversation that Jake and I have had a million times. With both the Rams and 49ers in particular, it feels like they are such great teams that are just a franchise quarterback away from getting there and winning a Super Bowl, which is why obviously our ears perk up when you hear about any rumors of trades or quarterback controversies with either Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff. Do you see both of those guys starting under center for these teams in 2021?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, let me start with this. With Jimmy Garoppolo, it's tough to see a team coming back under the same contract. This is a guy who's due $25 million next year for a team that's in tough cap shape, has a bunch of guys who are going to be free agents, guys like Richard Sherman, Trent Williams, you know, stars who were supposed to be big parts of that team, who they're going to want to bring back at one place or another. And I just don't think you can count on Jimmy Garoppolo being worth $25 million, given his injury history, given his level of play. You know, I think you have to be either great if you're going to have an injury history, or you're going to have to be reliable and be on the field every single week. And Jimmy Garoppolo is not either of those. So whether he takes a pay cut, whether he gets traded, that he has no trade clause, but you figure he would waive it for certain teams, whether he gets cut for another option, a quarterback, I could see them making a move there. Honestly, could see them, you know, trading up for a quarterback and sort of going with the cheaper option as opposed to trading for Deshaun Watson or trading for Aaron Rodgers, but obviously, or Matthew Stafford, but obviously those are also going to be in the discussion there. And then with Jared Goff, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I can't remember a time where a team, where a coach and a GM and an organization was like more outwardly antagonistic towards their quarterback.
Yeah.
I go back to maybe Kirk Cousins with Washington, where it was, you know, they weren't even pronouncing his name correctly when it came to his press conferences. And with Jared Goff, they're sort of saying, you know, he's our quarterback now, but hey, anything can happen with the cap. It's just, for an organization that was so defensive of Jared Goff, it was always, Jared's our guy. Even when he had a bad game, it was, oh, he wasn't the problem. To see everyone who's in an executive role in that organization change their mind and be so aggressive about saying, hey, he's our guy for right now, I think is very telling. I don't think it's an accident. It doesn't mean they're going to trade him necessarily or cut him, but I do think there is an emphasis there of, okay, we know we don't have a Super Bowl winning ceiling with Jared Goff as our quarterback. We need to get something more out of him. So whether this is a motivational tactic, whether this is a threat, whether it's going to be an actual competition next year with John Wolford, whether they're going to draft somebody, whether they're going to try and get someone in the second round because they don't have a first round pick. I think there are opportunities there for them to make changes at quarterback, but I do think that if I had to guess, I would say Jared Goff is starting in 2021 for the Rams, but Jimmy Garoppolo is not for the San Francisco 49ers.
Interesting, Bill. The storyline that has really been a shockwave into the NFL is the deterioration of the relationship between Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. And to see a guy who literally just signed a deal, a massive mega deal, and then to turn around and say, I don't want to be anywhere near this organization anymore. I don't know if I've ever seen that in the NFL. What kind of implications does this leave potentially for the NFL if Deshaun Watson is successful in his desire to get traded away from the Texans?
I think it's going to tell you how important quarterbacks are, right? I mean, you know, this is a league where, in reality, quarterbacks are the most important piece of your organization. They're more important than ownership. They're more important than the coaching staff. They get paid much more than the coaches, for that matter. And I think that, you know, you have to treat your quarterback like he's the most important piece of your organization. Doesn't mean you have to give him, you know, right of first refusal on free agents. Doesn't mean he has to be making coaching decisions for the team. But I think he has to feel like he's a valued member of the organization. And clearly, beyond the money, Deshaun Watson does not feel that way, and maybe he shouldn't feel that way, given all the reports we've heard about him being told he was going to be a part of these decisions, that he was going to be informed, and yet he's not involved in those decisions the way he was being told he was supposed to be. So I don't think this is something that's going to happen a lot when it comes to other teams, but I do think it's a question of having an owner who's now lied to his most important employee. And I think that, obviously, this is a family in the McNair family that's had some questionable comments about race in the past. This is an organization that was really torn apart by that a couple of years ago. And I do think that, you know, this is a uniquely difficult situation. So I don't think it's going to be a trend, but I do think with Deshaun Watson and the specific situation, I feel like the Texans have just screwed up. They've made mistake after mistake after mistake on and off the football field. And I do think that Deshaun Watson doesn't need to do that. And signing a contract is great. And I think that, you know, obviously I think he was committed to playing there, but I think that the decisions they've made that have been just bad on their face the moment they were made, I think just, you know, why would you want to play there at this point?
I have a question about the Super Bowl. As a side note, though, for everyone listening right now, Bill has a column up that just went on ESPN about 17 possible trade proposals.
Bill, 17? 17, Bill?
Possible trade proposals for Deshaun Watson. Basically, what he does is he tells you, like, here's who's eliminated based on need, on salary cap, and then here's who's left and what it would take. It's a great read. I do recommend it if you want to keep following this story, and you absolutely should. Bill, we'd be remiss not to ask you about a Super Bowl pick while we have you. Going to be a battle between Brady and Mahomes. Who are you taking here and why?
Okay, so I'll tell you why. Last year was Niners and Chiefs. I looked at the line of scrimmage. That's right. I feel like games are won and lost. Niners are much better at the line of scrimmage. I picked the Niners. I had to spend that entire game rooting against Patrick Mahomes. That's not fun.
No, what did you do?
You sit there thinking, okay, I don't want Patrick Mahomes to do something awesome on this play. That's not fun. And I swore to myself, never again. If the Chiefs make it back to the Super Bowl, I'm always picking the Chiefs, no matter who's on the other side, no matter what I think. And I think, I look at this game, I think the Bucs could control the line of scrimmage. I'm very concerned about the Chiefs' offensive line, but I'm not doing that to myself again. So I'm picking the Chiefs. I would say that about a touchdown. I think the Chiefs are going to win. Could certainly see the Bucs winning. It's not like it would be, you know, a huge upset to me. But I have to go with Patrick Mahomes just for my own sanity.
Your own enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, I definitely understand that and can appreciate that. Bill, before I let you go, how much coffee did you have to drink to go through those 17 possible trades? That's unbelievable.
I mean, you know, we're all quarantining here. I got a lot of free time on my hands. Not leaving the house. You know, so you got a lot of time to think about some trades. So I still think Sean Watson's not going to get traded. I think he's going to stay there in the long run.
Really?
I'll tell you what. You know, if you're a fan of one of those 17 teams, Seahawks are not one of them, obviously. Russell Wilson's not going anywhere. But, you know, some trades, I'm a little crazier than others. I will admit that, you know, there's like a 14 trade mixed in. That's probably not going to happen, but some interesting things to think about if you're thinking about Deshaun Watson going somewhere else.
I'll give a tease for you guys. There is an NFC West rival that is in the top three. So maybe want to go check that one out. All right. He is Bill Barnwell. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Let's get to some NFL headlines. Teams have begun to reach out to the Lions about Matthew Stafford's availability. The team will reportedly be parting ways with him, so he'll be looking for a new home, one of many quarterbacks who could be doing so in 2021. We could be, A, seeing quite a shakeup at quarterback for several organizations, and B, seeing maybe a second win for Matthew Stafford, because don't forget, he's like 31 or 32 years old, quite a bit younger than you would think. I mean, he's Russell Wilson's age.
It is weird.
It is weird. We talk about Russell Wilson like, oh, he's got like years to play. Let's talk about in his window. And with Matthew Stafford, I think because of the just the wear and tear his body has taken. And
right.
And was he in 2011 draft class?
Yes.
Heading out then a year earlier, it just feels like he's much older. I don't know. I need to look that up. And that was Andrew Luck, maybe. I don't know. And look, I'm getting distracted. Point being, Matthew Stafford.
2009 draft.
2009. See, that's what it is, too. But he is the same age.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But I think he's got a chance to certainly find kind of a second wind with another team. He is much younger than I realized he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with Matt Stafford, I think all those points that you make is exactly how I felt when I initially realize that he's 32 years old, but he's got a ton of injuries that he has dealt with and has missed a lot of time over his career. He's tough. He's played through a lot of injury. But this is the guy that I'm kind of rooting for. Phillip Rivers was the guy I was rooting for in the offseason when they made, when he had to make a destination change for his home. I think Matt Stafford is that guy as well because he's insanely talented. He's been in a really, really rough situation there with Detroit. Was a part of two really bad years over the last two seasons with their roster that they had there in Detroit. So overall, I think this will be a nice change of scenery for Matt Stafford and hopefully go to an organization it'll be an upgrade, but go to a organization that is a playoff contender that is much more put together and has an offensive staff that can really get the best out of him, and I'll be curious to see what that looks like.
Now, this was kind of a cool story from NFL.com. Cynthia Freeland had her five most overperforming and underperforming units of the 2020 NFL season. Here's how it worked. She basically said, hey, here's what this group would have been projected to do, and then here's how they actually did. So if you had a ton of talent and big names, and then, for instance, didn't get a ton of sacks on your defensive line despite having Clowney and a million other guys, then you, Titans defensive line, were an underperforming unit, and they were the number five underperforming unit. The number one overperforming unit, according to her, the Cleveland Browns offensive line.
Really?
Yeah. She said many of her models forecasted Cleveland was going to be the 11th best in the league. They ended up being the number one offensive line in the league.
I'm surprised by that because they made some serious additions to this offensive line. I mean, you look at what they did in the offseason. I mean, Teller, they added Conklin. They drafted their left tackle of this last year. I mean, Willis. They really seriously invested in that offensive line. And it's hard to know how it's going to come together and what it'll look like. But overall, I have to imagine that just preseason, I would have had them higher than 11th. But, I think that Kevin Stefanski did a really, really nice job in year one in Cleveland. And I think he's really turned them into a serious playoff contender over the next few years. They're not a team that I look at and go, yeah, they've got no chance to make the playoffs. They don't have a good culture. Even if they're doing well at the beginning of the year, I'm not buying into them. I take them seriously now.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers were number three on there with an overperforming run game. Chiefs had an overperforming secondary. Speaking of the Super Bowl, Bruce Arians, in our next headline, says he will not retire if Tampa Bay wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I did not expect him to. When he signed that two-year contract, he believed that he was going to play those 2 years. And Tom Brady has a disease. He has a sickness, Stacey. He always believes he can be better and do better next year.
But then he does. He's won how many Super Bowls since turning 40? What, two? Three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two. I
mean, at least a couple, yeah.
It's two.
Since turning 40.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. If he is successful next year again, and he doesn't have to make it to a Super Bowl, but let's say he gets to the playoffs and they lose in the divisional round or the NFC Championship, he will be back the following year because he thinks they can do better. I mean, I believe Tom Brady will not walk away from the game until the wheels fall off. I really, truly believe that. And it's always hard for me when the greatest quarterbacks of all time do that. It was hard for me to watch Drew Brees and his play deteriorate over the last 3 years, just physically. You don't see the best version of Drew Brees. Still dicing up, still making it work, but not the best version that you just have imprinted in your mind. I don't want to see Tom Brady's wheels come off and look bad his last season of his career. He's the greatest of all time. He deserve. I shouldn't say deserve because it's up to him, but I would love to see him just end on a high note.
Question for both of you, and I'll try to think of an answer too, but we may need the power of three brains here. So two headlines here. Bills GM Brandon Bean says he's not anticipating any blockbuster moves this offseason. Meanwhile, Saints GM Mickey Loomis said that they're going to wait for Drew Brees to make his decision, but he is not expecting the Saints to head into any kind of rebuild mode. So here's my question. Of the top playoff teams, some of the top seeds in both the AFC and NFC this year, which team could look most different in 2021?
I have to imagine it's the Saints. $100 million over the cap.
It's reckless.
How could they not? How could it not be the team that's going to look the most different?
Bill and just throwing it away. Like, I didn't see it.
Yeah. I no one's going to hold you to that? Okay.
Right. It's like you get paid on Friday, you go out.
Dodge
you go,
the commissioner.
Yeah, on Saturday, you're having a great time, and then Sunday it's like, well, where'd that comma go in my bank account?
Yeah, wait. No, do I get paid this Friday? Because it's been 2 weeks, right?
Oh, shoot.
No, I just got paid.
Yeah, not good.
Where'd
so Mickey Loomis can say that all he wants. Sean Payton certainly doesn't want to be coaching a team that's in a rebuilding phase, but they're going to have to make a lot of sacrifices along the way. I'm going to be really curious to see what that roster looks like, but that's the number one group that I point to. The other one that could be drastically different, Stacey, I'm going to give you two, and they're within your own division. The 49ers have a ton of free agents right now. 40, I believe it is. 40
plus. Free agents? What's like one of the top agents. One or two of those?
I'd have to look at it. But they have a lot of free agents to their roster. The Rams, we all think, is just going to be relatively intact. That's not necessarily the case. They've got a bunch of key defensive starters that are up on their contracts right now. John Johnson, Leonard Floyd, he's not guaranteed to come back. And Leonard Floyd, yeah, he had a great time with the Rams, but do you think he comes back just to play with Aaron Donald? Or could he go to maybe somewhere like the Chargers or somebody like that to follow Brandon Staley or go after more money because he had an unbelievable year, showed he could be a legitimate edge rusher in the league, and you will get paid premium dollars if you can do that. So I don't think Leonard Floyd is necessarily a lock to come back for the Rams either.
Holy cow, they have so many. So for the 49ers free agents, Trent Williams, Richard Sherman, Solomon Thomas, Jaquiski Tartt, Kyle Juszczyk, Tevin Coleman, Kendrick Bourne, Quan Williams, Ronald Blair, a ton of their secondary. Kerry Hyder, who was their leading sack getter this year, replacing Bosa. Man, it's the lowered salary cap this year is going to result in guys who would have normally been on rosters or would have normally gotten really nice deals not getting them. And that's a bummer. And I know it feels dumb to complain that like, oh, someone's getting a couple million dollars less than they would have. But you work hard for that moment and that opportunity. And this was certainly an unforeseen circumstance. It'll be a very, very weird offseason and I think a free agency period like we haven't seen before. All right, coming up, we are getting back to the Seahawks offensive coordinator. Shane Waldron going to be the name there, the one we've been waiting to hear for 2 weeks. Jake says he is a perfect fit. He has heard some really good things from a source with the Rams. We'll tell you what it is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back in to Jake and Stacy. Now, Jake, earlier you said that you reached out to a source with the Rams who had some pretty good things to say about Shane Waldron. Who was the source? I'm just kidding. What did that source say?
Well, I have a friend on the staff there, and when that news came out that Waldron was going to be the new offensive coordinator, I'd done my research. I thought that this guy was the right guy moving forward.
You talked about him the day before.
Yeah, and he was my pick. He was my pick in terms of the fit and everybody else out there, but it only was confirmed by this text that I received from a member of that staff. It says, "This is a bigger loss for us than people realize. Shane is a great match for Russ." He went on further to tell me that Waldron was McVay's right-hand guy and was the key member on that offensive staff when it came to game planning each week. So everybody can have your concerns about, hey, he hasn't called plays in the NFL. That's definitely something that you have to look at. But if you're talking about hiring the guy that is the brain trust for Sean McVay and what they've been able to do over the years and how successful guys who have walked away from Sean McVay's coaching tree has been on their own, I think that it's pretty safe to say that fans should be excited about Shane Waldron. And obviously he's going to have to go prove that during the year. We all know that. So I'm not going to make any guarantees in this process. But when it comes to Shane Waldron, I believe he was the best guy that was available. I believe that he's a guy that is more than qualified to make this jump, and having a diverse background, seeing the game from every point of view. Rarely do you see a guy hired as an offensive coordinator that has the background that Waldron does, who has coached every single position on the offensive side of the ball. So he understands how the game connects from an offensive line standpoint, from a tight end standpoint, from a receiver standpoint, from a quarterback standpoint. Overall, putting together a game plan. So I think that what he does is he brings a wealth of knowledge and a different perspective and a different style of offense that than anything like the Seahawks have had under Pete Carroll and in the 9 seasons of Russell Wilson.
I'm also frankly kind of happy to see, I have my own critiques about the Sean McVay coaching tree, just with the quick ascension of coaches. But I do like a lot of the coaches that have come from that coaching staff. And I am very intrigued to see what Shane Waldron looks like with his coaching staff. And if you aren't at least intrigued to see what someone who has been with Sean McVay's offense can bring to Seattle's offense, then I don't know what kind of Rams teams you've been watching, because those have been some very lopsided battles. Now, the two critiques you mentioned, number one, no play calling experience. And number two, the history of working with a Rams offense under Jared Goff that did take some steps back in the last 2 years. Those are fair critiques. There's nothing you can really do about the lack of play calling. You have to start somewhere, but also you don't know what he's going to look like as offensive coordinator, right? So just as I'm struggling to not like hype him up too much or say this is for sure going to work out, I'm also not going to totally critique him for not having that. Like Bill Barnwell, who joined us earlier, I had just signed on to the idea that they would get an experienced play caller. And so that was surprising, but I don't mind it. I kind of like it. As far as the Jared Goff thing, though, that's not a red flag to me at all. I understand why it would be. But to me, so many other things were going right with the Rams offense. The weapons around Jared Goff were great. The offensive line around Jared Goff was great. Jared Goff, when he was playing well and not making mistakes, and that included meaning he had a great run game, that offense looked great. They looked fantastic. When you can point to an offense and say everything around this one thing is great except for this one thing, it feels like you just put that on the quarterback rather than saying it's the passing game coordinator, it's Sean McVay, it's the offensive system, it's the scheme. No, I think it's Jared Goff. I think it's that Jared Goff makes boneheaded decisions and struggles to go through reads, and especially struggles when he doesn't have a run game, which helps with both of those things. So I'm not looking at that as a critique of Waldron. If anything, I am hoping that Waldron has some freedom to implement some of what he learned with Sean McVay's staff.
No question. And I believe that when you look at some of those traits, Stacey, there are questions. Someone else asking on 206, so why wasn't he promoted to OC last year instead of Kevin O'Connell? You have to look at it from this perspective. Titles do not necessarily mean that is exactly who these guys are in the building. And let me explain to you as to why. Everybody remember the whiz kid, Joe Brady, who went on from the Saints to LSU to offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, and who had an opportunity to interview at every single head coaching vacancy this season. Mm-hmm. He was the Saints' offensive assistant, offensive analyst for the Saints, and yet LSU, when they were looking for the next guy, heard Joe Brady is one of the main guys from the Saints staff that you've got to take a look at, because he brings a lot to this staff that people don't realize. And so he was a guy that within that building that had creative juice and a little bit more say and power in putting together game plans than people would realize. I think for Shane Waldron, that's why this news was comforting to me from someone coming from the inside on that staff, is that Kevin O'Connell, at the time when they wanted to hire him, was a highly sought-after guy, was a guy that was approached by other teams as being an offensive coordinator. And so if you're Sean McVay and you want to be competitive and you want to bring in as many smart guys, offensive-minded guys to your staff, you do have to make succession sometimes. You have to be willing to give somebody a title that they want in order to give them the position on your staff that is intriguing
incentive.
To them. Yeah, incentive. Yeah, sorry, I used the wrong word there. It is incentive for somebody like Kevin O'Connell to become the OC for Sean McVay rather than passing game coordinator, right, or QB coach, right? It is a more prestigious title. And so I think with that being said, you could give somebody that title. It doesn't necessarily automatically make them the orchestrator of that staff. And that's a little bit behind the curtain in terms of coaching politics.
All right, good stuff. It is our final 15 minutes of the show here, which means we are opening it up. It's what I need to know. Here's how it works. You send in your question, any question you have, or multiple questions, whatever you want, to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. It could be, what are you hoping Shane Waldron does as far as offensive game planning first? Who are you hoping that this team adds with their first draft pick? Who are you hoping they sign in free agency? It could be about the Mariners. It could be Sounders. It could be anything. It could be personal stuff. Anything you want. That's all coming up next and what I need to know.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Time for What I Need to Know, 710-710. That's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. It's where you should send your question right now. Jake, first one's for you. How will the new offensive coordinator attack a cover 2 zone/man under with Russell Wilson as his quarterback?
Wow. Okay.
That's what it says.
Great question. So cover 2, there's different approaches that you go into cover 2 versus cover 2 man. Cover 2 man means you have two deep safeties and you're playing exactly like it sounds. Man underneath. Five underneath playing man-to-man coverage. There's a variety of different ways that you can attack cover 2 man-to-man with certain concepts that always beat cover 2 man, and they're not always deep down the field or necessarily quick game, but outbreaking routes are always great versus cover 2 man. Rub routes concepts are great versus cover 2 man, and then typically teams don't like to play cover 2 man versus Russell Wilson because you leave yourself exposed to a quarterback being able to beat you with his legs, which Russell Wilson has the ability to do. So very, very few times have the Seahawks ever and Russell Wilson ever seen cover 2 man. Typically what you've seen is cover 2, you've seen cover 4, cover 6. Stacey, you know what the difference between cover 4, cover 2, and then the evolution into cover 6 is?
I got to call one of them quarters.
Yes, cover 4 is called quarters, but okay.
What?
So what is cover 6?
Was that your dime package?
I just said cover 4, cover 2, cover 6. Can you connect the dots to that?
cover four and cover two.
It's a combination.
Connected.
It's a combination of four and two. So 4 + 2 equals cover six. What that means is that one side of the field you play cover two, the other side of the field you play cover four.
How often do teams do that?
It just depends on what you major in. If you're a two high team, you're going to play a variety of those looks, and you'll call cover six. You'll call cover two, cover four. But the way that they will attack them, in my opinion, is they will be more effective in the run game, and they will not shy away from running the football under Shane Waldron. They will also have a more structured, better way of attacking short to intermediate in their pass game because it's something that they will practice. It is something that Shane Waldron in this Rams offense under Sean McVay has been exceptionally good at. Mm-hmm. And the other way that they will go about attacking it is with quick screens and in the screen game. That's something that I'm really hopeful that they will be able to implement a successful screen game with the weaponry that they have and guys that can be big-time playmakers if they get the ball in space.
From the 206, we were talking about fanny packs earlier because Jake was standing them. I was also disappointed. What type of snacks would you guys put in your fanny pack? I am partial to Goldfish. Big fan of Goldfish.
You would.
Yeah. What do you mean you would?
You would.
What, like over Cheez-Its?
Something basic as...
Those are good.
They're good. Fish.
They're good,
Jake.
But out of all... Do you know how many amazing kid options you have to choose from?
Well, Gushers. Are there new stuff now that I don't know about?
Gushers, fruit by the foot.
But you guys, your teeth are going to be coated.
Fruit snacks.
So what?
Just a good old bar. Have you ever had one of those Z bars that they sell now?
Yeah, the Cliff Z bars. They taste like brownies.
Dude, like I'm jealous of Jackson and Bodie. Like I wish I had those when I grew up as a kid.
I love those peanut butter crackers. They come in like a pack of six or something.
Ooh, those are a throwback.
Yeah, those are
they have some cheese ones too.
It's a major throwback, but that you've got to have some water on hand. You got to have some water in that fanny pack.
They
your mouth
coughing.
Gets real dry real quick.
Much like the ones where it's the breadsticks you dip in cheese. I always hated getting to the end and you realize you've wasted so much cheese.
Really? I usually always had the problem if I didn't use enough cheese. So on the last one, I've got to scoop it
That I could have had better ones. And instead, I saved too much.
Yes.
Who's most likely to be, what I need to know, who's most likely to be third receiver next season? The way I like to phrase this question, and I know this isn't what this person asked, is he on the roster or not? I think it could very much be someone on the roster, the weapons they have.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. They have to find their third pass catcher somewhere else. I really like Will Dissly. I don't know what Hollister's future is here because his contract is up as well. I am hearing nothing but great things about Colby Parkinson, and I think that he's a guy that fans should be really, really excited about this next season. 6'7", big body tight end that can be very effective in the passing game here in year two for the Seahawks. But I think that their guy next to DK and Tyler are going to be not on this roster right now. David Moore has come up with big plays, big moments. I think he's been a good player. But he has not been a consistent player. He has not been a consistent player for this group. And that is something that it makes it really, really tough. So with that being said, the 253 text in says Philip Dorsett. It sounds like they're going to bring him back on a flyer if he could stay healthy, possibly. But I don't think that their third leading target is on this roster right now.
We have someone texting from Naples, Florida. Former swimmer from South Seattle. I need to know what swimming events Stacy excelled at. Why, thank you, 239. It was the 100 fly, and then I did the 200 and 400 fly in both those medleys. Jake, question for you.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Cool.
We also have Trevor Moad, Russell Wilson's mental coach.
Oh, Trev?
He's listening to us right now from Lake Arrowhead.
Hey, Trev.
Said, listening to you guys. Keep bringing the fire.
Oh, nice. Well, I don't know if speaking of bringing the fire, but someone would like you to bring some advice. They said, I need Jake's advice for the best remedy for a sore neck. I tweaked my neck yesterday doing housework, and I'm sure Jake, being a former athlete, has a few tricks up his sleeve.
For a sore neck?
For a sore neck.
Not any real good ones.
Get a better pillow.
Get a better pillow. Put an ice pack on that thing. If if you have a spouse or a loved one, you know, maybe they could massage your neck, or you could invest in one of those Theraguns. Have you ever?
Are those
used
the
any
ones
of those
that are like the massagers and they
yeah,
kind of like
the
punch
machine
at
massager?
You? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They just punch at you over and over again. That's a great description of it. Yeah.
Jake, if you had the chance to make the Seahawks' first pick, are there some names you're looking forward to seeing in the Senior Bowl?
Good question. Right now, I'm doing all my research on that, so tomorrow we've got some names for you that really stand out. So as of right now, there's not any names that really pop off to me at the moment, but I will have all that information for you this next tomorrow. I promise. But what I've seen so far is there's some great candidates on the offensive line, and then I've seen just over the week, here in one-on-ones today that's been going on, that there's a couple really intriguing receiver prospects. So I'll have more information for you tomorrow regarding the Senior Bowl. I promise.
Well, I have some more information for you right now, Jake.
Oh,
you were
okay.
Giving me a hard time about my very hip, very cool, and fashion-forward mask chain. Well, from the 206, NFL refs have their masks on accord, so Stacey's mask chain concept has been endorsed by the NFL, Jake.
Referees are not the coolest people. Yeah. They're the lamest
You're gonna.
I'm doing it.
206. You're gonna come at me like that, and that's who you're gonna
no
use.
One wants
NFL
to dress
referees.
Me for
yeah, they are. They are the epitome of cool. They're the coolest.
Stop. Here's what I like about.
Give me a break.
If Jake, Stacy, and Curtis starred in a sitcom, what would it be about?
Would we have a laugh track in ours?
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes...
You need one for my jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. Audience, laugh. Laugh now. I don't know. Sometimes I think sports radio itself is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think that there could be a legit sitcom about a... you know, there was Frasier centered around, you know, Seattle. Just radio talk show. Why not sports radio?
Can I ask you guys...
Be great.
Very, very last.
Could we
one.
Have? Could we have a reality show? I don't know if it would be good enough for a reality.
I don't know if there's
show.
Any guts to be yeah. having that.
Mm.
I have one very last one. Can we throw it in here? I have like 1 minute, but what I need to know, my girlfriend, who I've been with for 7 years, is a huge KC stan, yet my dad loves the Bucks. I'm stuck on a hard place. Whose side do I choose? Help.
I mean, if you got a future with this girl,
you got to choose the girlfriend.
Yeah, if you
right?
want to put a ring on consensus. This girl,
yes.
Okay. Listen, all three of us are telling you, you got to root for the Chiefs.
The fact,
your dad
the fact
love
that
you
he's
no
asking
what.
This question is concerning to me.
No, Jake.
Yes, it is.
Maybe he is also.
Your dad's
a
not
fan.
Going anywhere. She could.
Exactly.
All right.
She could find somebody 10 times better than you, bro.
Unless you guys have a great relationship that you can go back and forth on, and she can take
it
all the jokes.
Can't survive this. You need to root for the Chiefs. Take our word for it. We're telling you what to do right now.
Yeah, I would highly, highly recommend that.
Show consensus. All right, he is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. This has been Jake and Stacey. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next on 710 ESPN Seattle.